Today is the 15th day of January 2018. I'm interviewing Bert and Shirley Francis of Taradale. Bert, would you like to tell us something about the history of your family?
I was born in Woodville, 1924, where I went to school until I was about 10, when we shifted to Paraprayam Beach, and I was there till I started high school in 1937. In Levin District High School, and when that closed down in 1940, I was a founding pupil of the Horace Newell College, and so I did all my secondary schooling at Horace Newell College.
Where was that? Was that in Levin?
That was in Levin. Yes, it was a new school. They closed down the old Levin District High School, of which I was the last Ducks medal, and I still got the medal. My high school was the straightforward subjects, and I sat the university entrance, or matriculation as we called it, in 1940. When I started work then at the local Horace Newell County, and I was there for a while working in the county engineer's office. Although it was a bit of a dead end there because of the wartime, and so there was nothing much doing. So I left there, and I applied for a drafting cadetship with the then Public Works Department, yes, which I didn't get, but they gave me a cadetship, which I worked in the Land and Income Tax until I went into the Army when I turned 18. And I was in the Army on the searchlights until I'd applied to go into the Air Force. So that came up while I was in Wellington on the searchlights, and I was transferred over to the Air Force. And then I didn't actually go into the Air Force at that stage because I was called up. Yes, so I had time in the Army, and then when it came up for me to transfer over to the Air Force, I went to Levin, which was just opposite where we lived. And I was there for a little while, and then on to Linton Camp. And then from there, shuttled backwards and forwards to different training courses, flight mechanics courses. Yes. And I finished up, as my Air Force experience, I finished up as a fitter to E leading air craftsman.
Linton was the coldest place in the winter?
No, I was there in the summertime. And from Linton, I went to Rongotai for 6 weeks, then down to Nelson for the flight mechanics course, back to Ohakia for a while, and then back to Nelson again for the fitter 2E course, and finished up at Ohakia. We were actually servicing the Skyhawks, so I was there on two occasions. So then I finally got shot overseas to Fiji, and I was there for 6 months, and we were servicing Ventura. Then we went from there, I was posted to the Corsair Assembly Unit, which was, they were assembling Corsairs on Los Negros up in the Admiralty Islands. So I was there, and that was what I did until the war finished. And one morning I was down working, and they came down and said, if you can be in air movement by 10 o'clock, we can go home today.
So you'd all be off?
Yep. So came home expecting to be demobilised straight away, but no, they kept me in for another year, and I was finally demobbed on the 10th of July 1946. I had gone down to Wellington to the Public Works head office to see if they'd get me out, but they wouldn't. So until I got out, when I did get out, they shot me up here to Napier. And I was in the drafting room. When I first started, I did a year actually practice training, like cadetship. Mm. And once I was through that, the drafting room here was busily engaged in providing roads for return servicemen's subdivisions.
Yes.
And so that got me into the roading side. They weren't very elaborate roads, and there were a few little bridges and so forth. But we've then graduated on the roading side to doing some of the state highways. There were several deviations. Are you interested in knowing what ones I did?
Yes, we'll just pause here for a second and come back. If you could tell me where your father came from.
He came from Melbourne in about 1900, and he was a Salvation Army officer in Norswood until he resigned and took up farming just out of Norswood.
Were they dairy cows?
Yes, and he went from there to Woodville, and he farmed on different farms in Woodville, and the family was born mostly... Well, all the family were born in Woodville. There was seven of us all together.
All boys? Mix?
Five boys and two girls. The eldest girl had a bad attack of polio, was crippled with polio.
Right. What was her name?
Elsie.
And your brother's names and your other sister's name?
The other sister was Rita, and there was next was Walter, Wally, George, Henry, Bill, and myself.
And they all went to school at Woodville and then at Paraparam?
No, they all left school by the time I went.
Because you were the young one, weren't you?
Yes, it was about 7 years, well, nearly 7 years difference. So they'd all left and gone. Some were on the farm.
Yes.
Some had gone to work on other farms. One had even gone to Australia to work.
Even though your father came from Australia, did he come from England or Ireland?
No, he was born in Melbourne. His father was born in Melbourne. It was his grandfather that came from England. I managed to get a birth certificate, which I've got in my records.
Well, if you can find it, we can attach that and have that copied too.
Oh, okay. Yes,
they're quite special, those things.
I think I can grab that.
Are they all alive still? Or
no, I'm the only one left.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Last man standing.
Yeah. There's my last brother, Bill. It must be, I'd say about 8 or 9 years since he died. He died in Harborough, and it was quite a family. He had quite a few children. I can't remember all of them.
Sure.
The only son died quite young, Ron, but the rest survived, and I think they all are still alive, and
yes,
they have
sure.
their family.
So, coming back to your life with the Ministry of Works, at that stage you were designing roads and tracks for rehab farms.
And yes. And then I went on to state highway deviations.
So which ones were you involved in?
Well, right. There was the Whirinaki-Tongoi deviation just out of Napier up on the road to Wairoa. That was done using a new type of transition curve, which we actually did a lot of work on, and we actually developed special tables to use them. We did quite a lot of work to actually work up those. They were called Royal Dawson curves, and they were very laborious ones to use.
Yes.
We had printed tables to work from, but they were so laborious that we finished up generating a whole lot of tables. That
would that have been from this side of the elbow, from Whirinaki up to
Oh
the
yes, it was. It was just quite a short deviation, just short of just a little bit further north than Bayview, just
yes.
up there. And we used those new curves on that, and I can remember sitting out in the sun designing the curves. The next one that I was involved was with Waihua Te Kumi, and there was quite some heavy cuttings, and that was quite a big one. The work was done by a contractor who was quite a shrewd contractor, because he had to take a big cutting off one point, and there was a lot of rock in it, which he sold to the harbour board and tried to claim for Matty Druzianic. Did you know what he used to drive? A Lincoln Zephyr 12-cylinder.
That's funny how names keep popping up.
Yeah. Well, so that was that job, and I had quite a lot of hands-on with the back while they were building. From there, I did some work up in Gisborne area, which I'm not worried about. But the next Hawke's Bay one I did was the Taronga Kuma. Well, the Taronga Kuma, that was actually contoured using aerial mapping photos by Angus Watty, who was the retired surveyor, Lands and Survey, and he developed all the contours, and from those contours I managed to sort out the new alignment. We actually walked through the bush for that one. With the district highways engineer, we got lost in a bush in there. And so I had a lot of involvement with that one.
Yes.
It was fantastic. About that time, I'm not sure just where it fitted in time-wise, but the head office brought out a system, what they called highways information sheets. They were done on A3 size for the whole of New Zealand, and we did Hawke's Bay only. And that was done, the surveys were done by the Napier district staff. The speed values for all the existing curves were measured, and it was decided that we had a bank indicator mounted on the dashboard of the car, and that when the bubble went out 10 degrees, that was the safe speed. So one of the senior engineers and myself did all the speed from Woodville through to Rangitaik up to the other side of Wairau. And he would, going one way, he would guess about what the safe speed was. Yeah. We'd done a lot of sorting out beforehand, but he would estimate what the safe speed was and take it at an even 10 miles an hour. It was miles,
yes. Yeah?
And he would call out the speedo reading. I would read the bubble, and I'd note it all down as we drove. And then coming back, he would take the same curves at an even 5 miles an hour, and we'd go through the same rigmarole again. And then back in the office, I would correlate the two lots of readings and interpolate to get the safe speed. And that was really, really something. It doesn't pay to get car sick if you're doing that job. So that was that. And I was actually involved in, I actually had to prepare the actual sheets. Now, those sheets could well be held by Opus, and it could be well worth asking a question. We put them up in great big hardcover folders,
yes.
One for the state highways and one for the main highway. So there's a huge amount of information,
yes,
on that. So if they're still around, they could be interesting.
Today they would just put a computer on the seat of the car and it would do it automatically, wouldn't it? Plus or minus.
But also I got a lot of the information through actually going through all the old files that were on record, which only came from after the Napier earthquake. And I went through all those files, and there was reports. We got reports on when the Dannevirke town,
yes,
was sealed in Woodville,
yes,
and there's reports.
Oh.
And I correlated all that stuff, and we actually got the whole history. Napier staff did a lot of the other measurement of the, you know, the slopes and all the widths and all the rest of it. So it was quite a job. Now, with the bridge design, that was carried out by a team of survey draftsmen in the Napier office. That's a photo there. And that was for
the Northwood Underpass.
But there was also the Kurupapa.
Yeah.
Kurupapa was interesting because that was an old wooden truss bridge, which you can see there. And the local member of parliament, who was also the Speaker of the House at the time, had promised that that bridge would be renewed before the election. So we actually set up a team in the office and did a bit of, you know, banging heads together,
yes,
and
yes,
so forth, and sorted out that we would use a Callender Hamilton bridge and launch it across. And you can see some of it. So you could take that if you want to.
Yes, we'll copy all of these because that's history. When you drive over the bridge that's there, you'd think that's been there for 100 years, but it hasn't been there that long, has it?
No. And what it was the old timber truss bridge had a load limit of 10 tonnes, and the carriers with the wool coming out, they had an old truck parked at one end of the bridge, and the theory was that when the trucks came down with the wool on, they'd take this old truck over and load half off, drive it across,
mm-hmm,
and then reloaded. When we went out there, the grass growing up under the old...
They would have still bought the full loads over the bridge.
Yeah, of course they did. And when they tried to pull it down, they had to blast it to get it down. And that shows them blasting it. So that was that. There it is there. The old one and the new one. And the MP, he opened the bridge, and we all went out for the opening. Had a day out in the sun.
I see Doc Haskell was the
He was district commissioner.
Yes, there. Very well-known man.
Yep. The actual bridge was launched like that. See, they had railway
lines. I see in this morning's paper they're talking about having to restrict trucks using the Red Bridge because it's no longer up to the loading levels of our modern trucks. It's the weight of the whole truck on the bridge all at once, isn't it?
Yes. My first involvement with bridge design was we did the Waihua River Bridge. Now, that is a five-span reinforced concrete bridge. The design team, which would probably be mostly those ones, we actually copied calculations that were sent up from head office, which was for a three-span bridge, and we added two extra spans on. Sure. And then when we did the design, all by hand, using slide rule and Hardy Cross, all the rest of it, right back to first principles. And that was my really first venture into bridge design. And then following that up, we did the same with the Rakai Parker River Bridge, just north of Wairoa. And there was we also did another one just north of Wairoa too, the Waikatuku. And so it was a very laborious way of doing it. And by that stage, the ones that were doing the bridge design, well, some of those, were designated design draftsmen. Now, what they did was they used to take a design draftsman from one of the districts down to head office to do a bridge design in head office, and for that I designed the Mungaturanga Bridge, which is a three-span bridge. There's photos here of that somewhere. That might be of interest to you.
Yeah, I've never seen a photo of Rosie McDonald. And there she is.
That was the whole game. Yeah, the Mungaturanga Bridge, it was actually conceived, the shape of it was conceived by the district design engineer who later became Commissioner of Works, Bob Norman. You may know the name. And he actually conceived the actual form of the bridge, and I did the actual detailed design, and we had to go right back to principles. I've still got a copy of the calculations and the contract documents out there if they're of any interest to you. I don't know that they would be, but I can grab them if you want. So I went down to head office to do that. I used to live in the hotel during the week. I'd go down on the bus on Monday morning, first thing, and I'd work through till Friday, come home on the rail car Friday night, and live in the hotel during the week. And I used to work at night to make up time for my travel. And coming home one time on the rail car caught fire, just out of Dannyburg. So that was an interesting thing. Another quite interesting sort of side show to the Mungaturanga Bridge is they've just recently opened that bridge, which I went up to the opening, the Matahora.
Well, it's quite spectacular, the new bridge, looking back at the old railway bridge, isn't it?
Yes, but if you look down to the old road, a cousin of Shirley's got killed on that Matahora Gorge, and we went up to the opening. Now, the firm that built the Mungaturanga Bridge, they put in an alternative design to the one that was advertised and got the contract, and they used the same concept as the Mungaturanga, but bigger. And so that's how I was able to go up and see that. And they say it's made a terrific difference.
Has it ever? You drove down into the bottom of the gorge. Yeah. And then you climbed all the way up again. Yep. They not only got rid of that bit, but they got rid of a few other bends as well.
Yes, and I was talking to a chap, a friend of ours who was a draftsman, and I worked with a draftsman here, and he'd just been up there, and he said it's cut a terrific amount of time off. I don't know what else we got on the bridge. Oh, we've got a few other bridges. Well, the Black Bridge, Gooseman was the Minister of Works. Yes. Wilkins and Davies did the contract. Bob Norman was the district design engineer here. That's the only thing that slowed Bob Norman down was gumboots and loose shingle. When Wilkins and Davies put the piles in for the new bridge, they drove one set of piles just 10 metres out of position. Had to cut them off and put another row in. But we went out to the launching. Now, the new bridge was a standard steel design, so we were only involved in the substructure, the piers, and Gooseman had said that we would call tenders for the new bridge on a certain date, and we did, on that date, And we worked overtime for about a month to get it out. And we went out for the launch. The actual person on the launching, Sid Drinkrow, I don't know whether you ever heard that name, but he was the district bridge overseer. And he actually went out, and we went out. Each span was 80 feet, I suppose it would be in those days. And there was quite deep steel beams. And he walked out on top of the shear cleats, carrying a short length of 8x8 timber under his arms across to the pier, and put it on the pier for them. The beams were launched with, yes, with the Flying Fox. And he did that with every span. He was a great one, Sid. And I had a lot of memories of Sid. And one of the more humorous things is that he used to look after the Portland Island Lighthouse, and they used to fly him up. And he was going up one time, and the pilot reached over in front of him, started reaching in the glove box, and he said to Sid, "Would you like a roll?" And Sid, "Oh, yes, I wouldn't mind." Meow! So that was Black Bridge. Waipawa River Bridge, that was also a standard steel beam, and we went to the opening of that on a scorching hot January day. Well, that Waipawa Bridge was opened by the then Minister of Works and Labour. Oh, what was his name? But we got just about scorched with that one. But when they were building it, one thing that stuck in my memory was they had to drive concrete piles, and the firm that was doing it, the son of the principal of the firm was looking after it, and Sid had actually gone and marked on chalk on the piles to how far they had to go in. And while he was away at lunch one day, he was really a cheat. He just rubbed out Sid's marks, shifted them up a bit so they didn't have to drive them so far. But fortunately, Sid tweaked what he'd done. The supervision I've done is you really got to have your eyes in the back of your head.
Yes.
Well, that was Waipawa. The Mungaturanga one, which I've spoken about. There was another one over on the Taupo Road, just near the Nunneries area, the Rotiti Bridge.
Is that a straight bridge? Or
No, it's just a short, straight steel. George Appleby and I did the design for the original, and it was very steep, and there was a lot of pumice in the area. So we actually redesigned precast concrete reinforced arch, and they were actually sort of hinge in the middle, and we actually designed it, and a very economical bridge to build.
Yes.
But we couldn't get a contractor to build it. They were too scared of it, so we had to scrap that one and put in a standard steel one. So that was Ruatiti. Arapiti Bridge is on the back road in Hawke's Bay, out the back.
It's,
do you know,
between Papuni Road
Well, they actually imported special steel 36 inch deep wide flange beams for that, and you'd have seen them. And they were actually cambered by using down by the Napier port, actually, and some land there. And they actually, with gas sort of doing heating on a taper, actually managed to get it to sag. But of course, then they turned it up the other way to use it.
For the deflection.
Yeah, and then the actual roadway was made actually in Waipawa, precast concrete by Humes. And I think they were only 5 foot wide, and they were actually carted up there and skidded out on the beams and then bolted down. And we went up for quite a lot of them. And that was done through Hume's Waipawa office. And that was another interesting one. It's got one short span on as well. But after they got the beams up, before they got the concrete deck there, the locals were actually walking across on the steel. Waione Stream Bridge on the Taupo Road, just north of the Tarongakuma, and we did a design for that in concrete, pre-stressed concrete, but the contractors put in an alternative beam bid to use ready-made steel beams, and this was what it finished up as. And so that was another one. The Kurupaponga Bridge, which you've got that one there, and we've talked about that before already. What they did, they set up a team to do that with Ministry of Works staff, and they set up a camp. And the old roadman on the Taupo Bridge, they didn't know how old he was, but finally they pensioned him off, but they set him up as cook for the camp. and so he was there for that. After he finally retired, they brought down a fairly large hut from one of the mills they donated and set it up opposite the pub, which possibly wasn't the best idea. Some of these photos show that very well. See, there's the old and the new bridge.
That's when you look at the amount of timber trusses they used those days.
Yeah, that, because the old road went over the top. Yeah. And this shows, so what they did to demolish it, they actually got chainsaws and cut through the top cords of the old bridge. And then they put a bulldozer upstream in the river with a rope on it and tried to pull it over sideways, and they couldn't. So they finished up doing that. They had to blast it.
And down she went. And so you left Napier at some stage and went north, didn't you?
Yes. I went and worked for a consulting engineer, Jeff Entrican, and we did a lot of the university buildings and so forth. And then government put a hold on, they stopped all new construction. And so I was working for Jeff Entrican at the time, and the jobs that he had lined up to do were cancelled. So when there's only two of you and there's only work for one.
And the other one's the boss.
Yes. Yeah. So I finished up going back to Ministry of Works in Auckland.
So how long did you stay with the Ministry of Works in Auckland?
At the time, while I was there, one of the consulting engineers, Babbage Partners, they advertised for an engineer to go up to Malaysia to supervise the construction of some bridges that they had designed. The chap that was up there, Chap Orange, he had a young family about to start school, and so he came home and they advertised for someone to go up in his place. So I applied for it and got it, and then had all our jobs and everything, both of us all set to go up to Malaysia. And it was being run by an engineer from another consulting engineer who unfortunately developed Alzheimer's, and he let the whole contract slip, so the whole thing was cancelled. So we never got there, and with a year's leave without pay from the works. So Babbage's took me on, and I did a lot of work for Babbage's bridge design until such time as what happened there. That work fell through. The Babbage's actually went into the kiwi fruit growing and fell through and fell flat and went bust. And so I was out of a job from them. So I left and went to work doing house structure design and so forth. And I did that until after we shifted down here for about 6 years. I used to email through all the stuff, and I'd sort out what had to be done and send it back, and they would put it on their computer and measure the lengths and everything, and I'd do the design here and shoot it off up to there. And I used to actually do design, and when the architect got too busy, he used to use an architect that came out from Germany, and I actually did some work for him when he was back in Germany. And so I kept on going until about 4 years ago, and I was starting to get my memory. I was frightened of letting something slip, so I gave it up about 4 years ago. But it was really what kept my memory going.
And do you play any sport at all?
Yes, at high school I played rugby. I was a front row prop in the high school team in the Horace New College, and I played tennis. We played when we were at Napier South. Shirley was in the. We used to play interclub, and we did that until we gave that up.
All right, well, look, at this stage I might get Shirley to come over and join the table, and she can tell us something about where she met you and where her family came from.
Born in Napier. All the family lived in Napier. I was the eighth one of a family of nine, year old the day before the earthquake. We were living in Thackeray Street, and from there we...
So which school did you... Primary school?
Nelson Park, and then Napier Intermediate.
And did you go to a high school?
No, I was working. I was working in an office when I was 14, yes.
Who were you working for?
My first job was Grain England's garage. My headmaster got me that job. So they added on a third form at Napier Intermediate in those days, because there was quite a few of us couldn't go to high school, and we actually had a secondary school teacher. She was wonderful.
Then you met Bert, and you got married, and how many children did you two have?
Well, we had three, but only one survived. We have an adopted son. Our eldest son was very good. He went on, became an aircraft engineer, right through, worked for Air New Zealand for over 30 years. He was wanting and making aeroplanes from the age of five. That's all he ever wanted to do. I had three brothers. They were all in the Air Force during the war, and two of them went up into the Pacific. But Ken, our son, he just loved it and went on, and he's now, quality control manager of a helicopter firm in Wanaka.
So your son, or your two sons, they're married?
Yes. Our youngest son lives in Australia, has done for over 30 years.
He's adopted. The youngest son.
Lovely boy. Still very special. We have two grandchildren, grandson and granddaughter, both married, living in Australia. One in Wollongong and one in Sydney. And three great-grandies, three great-grandsons.
Well, that's interesting. It's a long way to go. You just can't just hop down the road, can you?
No. Well, our neighbour next door has just come back to live from working over that way in the mines for some years, but he's now come back to live.
My son, I was talking to him last week, and it was 42 degrees. Mm. It was 27 degrees at night.
Yes, well, Gary, he said it was 47 in Sydney last week, I think it was.
So I believe that you two met playing tennis.
I belong to a tennis club. It was joined to St David's Church. Quite a big club.
Yes.
And Bert came there. We came went back to church there, and both were in the choir. And
when I got out of the airport and came up here, I started going to the St David's on the corner of Wellesley and
Bigger Brown Street,
and I forget the name of the other, Todd Street.
So how long have you lived here? This is a lovely suburb.
We've lived here for about 10 years. We moved to Auckland for Bert's work.
Yes,
we were up there for over 40 years. We've been here, what, about 10 years now?
But you've lived most of your life in Hawke's Bay, or quite a lot of your life in Hawke's Bay, haven't you?
Yes. Well, coming up March, we'll be married 69 years. Doesn't it show?
No. Both look and sound as happy as Larry.
I'll be 88 in, two weeks' time.
Okay, well, I think probably that gives us a pretty good picture of your family. And is there anything else, Bert, you can think of? And this will go on the internet and it'll stay there forever.
Don't bother with the computer.
So thank you very much,
You're
Bert
welcome.
And Shirley. And your Jenny Hall, is she a relation of...
Oh, she's a cousin. She's one of the
Halls. Oh, she's the Halls that you spoke about.
Jenny's a whore. Shouldn't be a whore. They should all be Suttons. Been to some of the family do's there over the last few years, you know, when David and those were still alive. And I looked at all these younger ones sitting there and I thought, your name's not Hall. Should all be Suttons.
We have a similar thing in our family. There's nothing wrong with
it. You find all sorts of things. Through our family, I counted the other day, I think we've got seven adopted children through the family. Because even I had all those brothers and sisters, we didn't have many children. I always used to laugh at Bert because his father came from Australia. Because I used to say, yes, I know why he was in Australia. But it turned out he wasn't sent there.
It's amazing what you find when you're doing these things. I can remember when I was doing these family trees, I came across where one of the sons, his wife, died very young when the first child, I can't remember, daughter or son, but was only about a year old. And the next thing, she pops up with more of a family, but there's no marriage certificate.
That's the Sutton family crest that Bert's got there. That's nice. That's really nice.
Well, I'll turn this off now.